Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Basketball chatter here. Eastern Conference Finals. Knicks and Pacers get started tonight. Game one of the Western Conference Final last night. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's on vacation this week. Nate is in, and joining us on the Western Hotline is Steve Ashburner, senior writer, NBA.com. Whenever we decide to dip our toes in some NBA waters, we reach out to Steve often, and he's gracious enough to join us once again. Steve, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
So, New York, huh? I mean, it's been a long time for anybody to go back there this late in the postseason.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and you can see how giddy their fans are about this opportunity. I think it's a nice matchup, particularly for the Knicks, because they were so banged up when they played Indiana and lost to them in seven games last spring. You know, it really wasn't reflective, I think, of the level of the teams. So now New York, much healthier. Indiana has been tremendous to this point, and I think this one is going to be, you know, really a difficult and a long series.
Getting back to that in a minute, Steve, what's your thought on, you know, sometimes people like to say things like the league likes teams to be in it late, or that it's good for the league, and it feels like there was a 10-15 year conversation about the Knicks and how it would be important and better for the NBA overall if the Knicks were competitive and good. And we've kind of made it to that point, right? That this is, they're not exactly newly competitive. They've been pretty good for a couple of years, but to get this far, are you someone that subscribes to that this is just kind of good for the game, or it feels good for the NBA?
You know what? I would give that a little bit of a little bit of legitimacy. I think it's too easy to overstate that. I mean, the fact that the Knicks have not been involved in things, you know, hasn't stopped a lot of, you know, attention from being focused on the league, a lot of intriguing matchups and plenty of people across the country being interested in postseason series and ultimately NBA finals. I suppose just by sheer market size, there's something to that. You get more people tuning in. I've never fully understood the need. Now, I get it from the broadcast partners. They want their commercials to have the most possible eyeballs to charge the highest rates. Beyond that, though, the idea that if I'm enjoying the NBA Finals, I need to know that a bunch of people in New York are also watching it. I don't get that at all. I mean, I don't care if the guy next door is watching it. It's enough for me, and I'm glad it's on. And I don't think there's been any blinking over the idea that we're going to continue to televise these things. So I don't get that worked up over that. To see big ratings and numbers, oh yeah, people are doing what I'm doing. God, let's have a little more personal security than that.
Yeah, Steve, interestingly enough, like this playoff for the NBA is going to feature three teams who have never won a championship. The Knicks haven't won one since 1973. And, you know, you went into this playoffs, I know I did, as a Knicks fan, Steve. Like, my Knicks buddies in group chats, like, we got to the Boston series, and it was like, well, guys, like, maybe they'll win a game. And then they won game one. And then I was like, well, we'll always have game one. And then they won game two, and they ended up winning that series. And I'm just wondering, going into these playoffs, it was kind of, I don't know, maybe a foregone conclusion that it would be Cleveland-Boston in the finals. Injuries kind of dictated otherwise. What are your thoughts about the state of maybe the league in this final four grouping, where you're kind of getting new blood? I know Minnesota was there in the Western Conference Finals last year, so was Indiana, but these are kind of newer teams to the, I guess, general spotlight of the final four.
Well, coming into this season, you'd had six different champions in 6 years. There had not been a repeat champion. There hadn't been anybody who even did it, you know, 2 or 3 years apart, starting with, I believe, Toronto in 2019. So, you know, in a way, it's sort of like you build a machine to produce a widget, and then it starts producing that widget, you know, time after time after time. That's kind of what the NBA salary cap system is. It's designed for parity. And so we're seeing parity. It's much more difficult to build super teams. It's player movement is more difficult, certainly of star players, based on the contracts and the impact in terms of tax hit, luxury tax hit to payrolls. And so everything that the league has done has been pointed toward having as many cities, markets with competitive teams as possible, and now we're seeing the output of that. So this is really not a surprise. This is sort of what's intended. Now, I thought we were going to have a repeat champion this year. I thought the Boston Celtics were the best team in the NBA, however the regular season played out. I mean, Oklahoma City won a few more games. But I thought that the Celtics had the deepest roster. They had the most talent. They were able to go through the regular season sort of, you know, with one arm tied behind their backs. It's like, well, we're not going to play Holiday and Porzingis, but we got plenty without the, you know, with the other guys. Or we're going to sit out, you know, Brown and Derek White. Or they could spot guys in and out, and it really wasn't hurting them. But obviously they had struggles, and the Knicks series was, you know, eye popping to me. The way they blew those 20-point leads against New York, and then of course the Tatum thing just sort of sealed their fate. But no, I think the league, you know, for the most part, I think they like having you know, the wealth sort of spread around. And the downside, of course, is you don't have dynasties. But when there were dynasties, you know, yeah, you had a lot of excited fans in Boston and L.A., Chicago for a stretch. But, you know, the rest of the league sort of had to just sort of sit around, you know, twiddling their thumbs. So I happen to like this better.
I also want to ask you about Tibbs, you know, Tom Thibodeau, the Knicks coach, especially this year, Steve.
Yep.
Got a lot of, I don't know, like criticism for playing his starters as long as he has all year. I mean, they have, I think four of their starters are top 10 in the league in minutes played and minutes per game. You have the minutes champion in Josh Hart, who basically doesn't come off the court same. I guess I look at who is left. Last year, it was the criticism that by playing his starters too long, they were banged up by the time it mattered in the playoffs. This year, very different story. And the other teams were kind of seeing, and I saw a great article and a great piece of like, maybe Tibbs is onto something. What are your thoughts about, you know, teams that do a lot of sitting their starters and a lot of rest for their star players, where the Knicks, they run their starting five pretty much more than any team in the NBA?
Well, full disclosure here. I mean, I'm firmly in Tom Thibodeau's camp on this. I mean, I've known Tom since he first got a toehold in this league with the Minnesota Timberwolves as an assistant coach in 1989. And I have, you know, I've talked and dealt with other coaches in the meantime, obviously with Tom as well. I really believe the whole minutes thing is overstated. I think that the load management trend got out of control, and I don't know that it necessarily served any good end for the NBA or its players. I think that trying to anticipate fatigue injuries is about as far from an exact science as you can possibly get. What do we see mostly these days? We see these soft tissue non-contact injuries where an Achilles snaps. Mm. Anybody ever say that an Achilles with Damian Lillard or Jason Tatum is related to cumulative minutes over a six-month period? I don't buy that. I think that wise coaches for decades have regulated, modulated guys' playing time, their minutes, their wear and tear by what they do in between games. I know plenty of veteran coaches who would have essentially walkthroughs on practice days as the season went on because they're not going to burn guys out on a practice court. And so, you know, it's that time in between. You've got, especially in the playoffs, at best you play one game every 48 hours. So what do you do for those other 45 hours in between the games? You know, that to me is every bit as essential as, you know, the wear and tear in a game. Flip Saunders, the late Timberwolves coach, you know, he used to say, are you going to tell me that five extra minutes on the floor when a guy is lathered up and loose and in the flow of things and running on adrenaline as much as anything is going to matter. You know, if he's averaging 33 minutes or 38 minutes, you know, as long as there are enough off days in between. Now, if you're playing, you know, four games in five nights, all right, maybe there's a consideration there. But I think by and large, you build up endurance. Everything else that you do in life, certainly athletically, that you increase your stamina through, it tends to be a good thing, right? I mean, you know, you don't prepare to run a marathon by lounging around. I think it's overstated. I think it's a too easy hook with Tom Thibodeau. You know, it's been brought up in Chicago. It was brought up in Minnesota, and obviously now it's been brought up with the Knicks. But I think it's a bunch of hooey. I think that when you get into a playoff atmosphere, you know, teams for decades have shrunk their rotations to seven or eight guys at most. And you know, your frontline players are playing 40 minutes. So, I don't have a lot of patience for it. I think it's a cheap tactic.
Steve Ashburner, senior writer, NBA.com, ahead of tonight's game, one of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Knicks and the Pacers. On the Pacers side of things, you know, I almost feel like, Steve, we're here in Buffalo, and you know, we're a market seeking its first championship in a major sport. I have a soft spot for a team like the Pacers, where not the biggest market, they're competitive an awful lot, and you know, it feels like it would be great if they made it all the way and won. I'm thinking back to the. For anybody that's watched the NBA for a long time, it's hard not to draw back on the Reggie Miller Pacers and the Knicks back in the late 90s and early 2000s, and just kind of have this spot where, you know, if it's Halliburton that takes over, whatever it is for the Pacers, I think they'd be a good story when this is all said and done.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, what I like about Indiana, a couple of things. One, their depth. I think they've really done a great job of roster building there. You know, they don't necessarily have an all-NBA first team player. Halliburton can bubble up and get that sort of attention, but I don't think that he certainly doesn't carry himself like a star and generally doesn't get treated like, you know, one of the faces of the NBA that we hear so much about. So I think that you know, this saying you get nowadays in the league about guys who are stars in their roles, I think that typifies the Indiana Pacers. They have the division of labor there is very clear cut, and there's some overlap, which is by design in terms of wings who can defend, you know, with Mathurin and Neesmith and even Andrew Nembhard. But, you know, for the most part, guys know their roles. They know the pecking order of that team. It's fairly democratic. Everybody likes to play at a high pace. The way that they are able to put defensive pressure on, you know, up to and including 94 feet, and then immediately shift into a fast break transition kind of an offense. That takes a deep roster. It takes high energy. And, you know, they do it as well as or better than anybody else in the league. So I like Indiana a lot. I've been really impressed. And Carlisle, of course, he's got an NBA title under his belt, and he's won Coach of the Year a couple times. I think that he's a perfect coach for this team as well.
Steve, I want to bring back another point you mentioned a couple of minutes ago about how there's not really those super teams anymore. You know, the you know, Bosh, Wade, and LeBron James. There's not a ton of like these big threes that remain anymore. And I'm curious on your thoughts, because I look at the Final Four in the West, and now in the East between, you know, the Knicks and Pacers, and out West with Oklahoma City and Minnesota, is each team's, you know, kind of quote star is a ball handling guard, all of which can shoot. I'm just wondering now your opinion of the style that's going to maybe win in the NBA is having your best player, you know, maybe outside of, you know, Denver with Jokic. Obviously, he's an unbelievable talent and not a point guard. But these ball dominant guards with shooters and sort of role players and deep benches, is that maybe what you're going to see as the sort of blueprint for NBA franchises that, and maybe does that bring in smaller franchises in smaller markets that maybe can't afford to have, you know, these luxury tax rosters where you've just got tons of these, you know, not necessarily star players, but expensive players?
Well, I don't know that I'm following you 100%. I mean, I think there's always been a dominant player, a guy who handles the ball a lot. He used to be LeBron for the teams he's been on. I mean, sometimes it's been a non-point guard. I think it's just sort of a coincidence. I mean, Anthony Edwards is a shooting guard. I don't really see a pattern there. I think that to me, it's the way that these guys came up organically within their teams. Anthony Edwards was the number one pick because Minnesota stunk, and you know they happened to nail the number one pick right that year. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I mean, he sort of was a happy result of a Paul George trade that the Clippers gave him up. I remember up until a couple years ago, the thought was that Oklahoma City, you know, they've got all the surrounding pieces, they've got the role players. They will eventually use some of those, you know, trade assets, those draft picks that they have stockpiled, and then they'll bring in a star who'll be the straw that stirs the drink. Well, he emerged from within, and that accelerated the Thunder's timeline with the SGA emerging as that guard. I mean, Brunson should have been re-signed by the Dallas Mavericks. The fact that they did not do that, it looks now like one of the major gaffes. I mean, they sort of gave up on other guys too. I mean, Porzingis is another guy, and could be that Doncic will be that guy too. And most of us would say that was a mistake to get rid of him. So, you know, he ended up becoming this leader of a team and all NBA quality MVP, you know, considered player in New York, sort of on his own and within that system. And then Halliburton in Indiana, the same thing. He was part of a pivotal trade, you know, two good players swapping teams. Domantas Sabonis, who's a double-double kind of machine and continued that in Sacramento, and Tyrese Halliburton, who was sort of a young guy on the come. But again, I don't think people thought Halliburton would be the player that he is. So I don't see a real pattern there. I just think that it's refreshing to know that it wasn't simply a free agent purchase that bought somebody a ticket to the conference finals at this point.
Steve Ashburner, NBA.com senior writer. Steve, thanks very much for the time. Always a pleasure. Always glad to have you on. And enjoy this Eastern Conference final series.
Yeah, you too. You're welcome.
All right, Steve Ashburner, NBA.com senior writer. One other basketball note for you, Nate, here. Which, by the way, I want to get your thoughts on the Knicks and your prediction, your vibes. You're a big Knicks fan. You got to explain to people that might not know what Bing Bong is. Before that, one other basketball note. UB tweeted yesterday, made it official. Turner Battle named GM for UB men's basketball. Now, I will effort to get Turner on the show soon to talk about that and, of course, share his greatest memories of playing on the same court with me in a rec league.
Oh, okay.
I was on Turner's team. Turner was on my team. I'm close friends with his wife's family, the Hell Side, some of my oldest friends in Buffalo, and you know, we played together. It's pretty great. He was pretty great. I was on the court.
Yeah, no, he's so.
Have you ever done that? Owen, you'd have a good like
play rec league.
But you were also obviously way better at the said sport that I'm going to say I was a basketball. Where you're on the same court with one of the like top 1% of people that have ever done it. To be on the court with Turner Battle, rec league, we're playing at Nichols, and you know. Just like pass over to Turner, he elevates for a three, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like you're just a passenger. Yeah, you are a passenger.
I do have a really good story about my first sort of experience venture into high level hockey, like after AAA. I got drafted to Sault Ste. Marie in the OHL, and I went up for rookie camp and did well enough that I got invited to main camp. So like I'm at training camp with all these guys. And Barrett Hayton had just gone fifth overall to the Coyotes the year before. Mm-hmm. He's on Sault Ste. Marie. And we do this big, it's called the red and white scrimmage at the end of training camp. It's like the final cuts, play this scrimmage, fans come in. And, you know, they do a shootout at the end of those every time just to, you know, give the fans something to sort of have fun with. And I stop the first two shootout attempts, and then I see Hayton get off the bench, and I'm like, ugh, this might be tough. This guy's, like, just got picked in the top five of the league. Like, I am 16 and have never been around anybody this good. And he came down, and I made the decision before he even touched the puck. Like, I'm going to poke check him. I'm going to get him. Like, I'm going to go at him, and I'm going to get him. He got to the top of the circle, and I think I probably moved my blocker a millimeter before he recognized, oh, he's going to try and poke check me. And audibly, like, to where you could hear it in, I'm sure fans could hear it, laughed as he shot the puck five hole and just, like, clink in the back of the net. I'm left there standing, not even, like, frozen, not even moving. Hayton laughs before the puck's even in the back of the net.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of those moments. Byfield got me once really good, too, on L.A. When I was 15. That was fun. But there's always time. Like, you can always see it, no matter how where you are. Those top, like, elite 1% guys are just – they're freaks. They all are.
Yes, they are. And I'll say this about Turner Battle. This would be – so it would have been Reggie Witherspoon and Jim Kwitroff was the assistant coach.
Yep.
Jim's a very good friend of my dad's. I used to do the UB basketball camp every summer. And this would have been, you know, middle school to high school. All the players of those teams would be at the camp, and they'd be the counselors and the coaches, and then you would separate, team up, and then play scrimmages. And it was like probably my favorite part of every summer was that camp.
Yep.
And so I became very, like, I was a big fan of those teams, the Turner Battle teams, like Rod Middleton. I remember a lot of names from those teams.
They were so fun, that
because
team.
I was going to seven games a year, and like that was the most success the school had ever had.
Yep.
Under that program. So yeah, like that name, Turner, hits.
One thing about, and when we get to talking to UB about this news a little later on, you know, maybe later this week or next week or whenever, the new kind of created role in collegiate sports of general manager, to me, makes total sense. You know, you've got athletic programs with athletic directors, and they've got what? A lot on their plate. You're an athletic director. You have all the sports, and these sports are obviously money machines, and like how many people in the entire sport, and then to have, oh, let me just have a general manager for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that makes so much sense to me, to have someone with their eyes that, again, is played and like to have played in the program. Like, I think it makes a lot of sense throughout college sports. We're starting to see this role been created.
It's almost becoming more important than the head coach.
Yeah.
Because, in reality, I don't think it's very possible for these head coaches to be
general managers,
to be recruiters be the coach.
It seems like it's a really organically created spot in the new landscape of college sports
with the NIL.
Yeah,
right,
it makes a ton of sense. 803-0550 is our phone number. Diane Orsini reports the Tush Bush expected to be banned. Are you ready for the fantasy football fallout? You want to trade for Jalen Hurts while you can right now? Everyone thinks, oh, Tush Push is gone.
Oh, that's right. All his value is gone.
Tush Push is gone. Oh, you want to unload Hurts? You want to trade for Hurts? What do you want to do? Tush Push time?
I'd trade for him.
I also would. 803-0550. He's still pretty good. And I bet they still sneak him in from the one. They just don't push it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Weren't all the stories that he squats 500 pounds?
I've got no concerns.
That doesn't change.
Just as much success without the Tush Push.
Yeah. 803-0550 is our phone number. Jeremy and Joe. Joe's out this week. He's on vacation. Nate's in today. Hang out. 803-0550 on WGR.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.